Session number 6175, reel 2.
Mrs. Jones, take 2. So could I now ask you about the luggage again? You said you had one suitcase and you would have been wearing a label. What else did you have with you? Anything at all on the journey?
Our gas masks. Still in their cardboard boxes in those days. It was much later on before people started having fancy covers for their gas masks and fashion conscious about whether your gas mask was in a patent leather case or whether it was in a ordinary leather one or material. But the boxes disappeared very soon afterwards, although we were supposed to keep them in the boxes to keep them from getting banged about.
Did you cover yours at all later on?
Not during my school days. I don't remember covering it later on when I was at work and you had gas mask cases to match your clothing. You could.
Where did you get these?
Well, some places they were sold, like handbags in handbag shops. Sometimes you made them with material that you had over from your coats you made or that sort of thing.
And would you have continued taking your gas mask about with you throughout the war?
Yes, I think we carried them about all the time. It's very seldom you would forget it. It was one of those things you picked up with your handbag in those days. And certainly if we went to school without our gas masks, we would get into trouble or be told to report the next day with our gas masks.
Regarding your own little group that you were split up into for the journey, what sort of job did you have as a 15-year-old? Were you the only older child in that one?
In that group, yes, I would say we went, there was about 6 or 7 of us. I would have been 15 and then you would get to 13, maybe to 12 and 11, 10. None of them knew each other very well. So we were a strange little group, really, and that must have been repeated the whole way down the train. Friends of mine who were in the same position, they had other children to shepherd about. I think it was really so that the younger ones didn't feel too bad. We could comfort them if they felt very tearful, and I think I had one who was a little bit tearful, but she soon cheered up when she was watching the cows and sheep out of the window.
And how about the luggage? Did you have to help them with their luggage, the little ones?
Yes, to a certain extent, but there wasn't much difficulty with luggage. We all had just one case and gas mask, etc., and they all went on the racks. I expect we just climbed on the seats and put them on the racks in those days. We wouldn't have bothered about trying to reach up.
Did you have any food on the train?
No, we didn't have any food. We didn't have time to get any food. I think probably our parents, if I remember rightly, we probably did have something like some sweets and that sort of thing, but we certainly didn't have a meal. We were all very hungry by the time we reached our destination.
Was there a seat for everyone?
Yes.
On the train?
There was definitely a seat for everyone. Well, as far as I know, I mean, we all had a seat. There were about 8 of us in the one carriage. And when you've got a mixture of small children and large, you know, there was plenty of room for all.
And how about the toilet facilities? Can you remember any problems there?
I seem to remember that we stopped once or twice at various stations. Everybody rushed out that wanted to the toilet facilities and rush back again. Certainly there wasn't anything on the train that we were in.
Who was with you? Who accompanied you on this journey from your school? You say there were 500, approximately 500 in all. Would all of your teachers have gone?
Yes, they did. All our teachers. And our headmistress, who was Dr. Dorothy Brock. She was definitely around seeing after our interests at the station. Other teachers don't really stand out in my memory too much.
Were there any other helpers of any description apart from teachers?
No, I think probably a few mothers had been at the school and had come to the station with us, but nobody else came with us.
Can you remember your feelings about this and expectations? How long did you reckon you were going for at this particular stage?
Oh, just a few months. Quite. It never occurred to us that we'd be away very long.
Do you think the others felt like that too?
I think in the main, yes, they did.
Did your school tell you anything?
Very little. Did they give you any sort of very instructions? Little. No. No, very little.
Could I now go to the reception in Charing, you say? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, Charing.
Charing, in Kent. These worthy people who were expecting an infant school and were confronted with 500 secondary school girls, were they sort of billeting officers who met you there?
Yes, they were billeting officers, and I should imagine WVS. And we were taken to an infant school because I remember the desks were so tiny we could hardly sit down. We sat on the top of the desks, the bigger ones. And then there were so many people with lists in their hands, presumably lists of billets of Mrs. So-and-so will take four and Mrs. So-and-so will take one and she doesn't want a boy and she only wants, you know, a young girl and that kind of thing. Because they were expecting infants, and so the billets really were quite unsuitable in many cases, where they were perhaps expecting a little girl to share with their own little girl, they then found that they had, you know, a much bigger child to deal with. So it was quite difficult, and when I look back, the teachers must have been absolutely horrified and wonder what on earth to do. But they got us all into billets that evening, with some difficulty, I imagine.
Do you think you would have been one of the last to go? You did mention it was about 10:30 by the time you arrived.
Yes, we were amongst the last to go, yes. I don't know why, I think it was just one of those things. And we were put onto a lorry. We went in on a lorry, and a lorry full, and people would be dropped off at various houses on the way. I suppose it was the route that they were going to take. And we were among the last, and we ended up at this farmhouse, which we were quite pleased about in the end.
When the sort of lorries stopped for children to get out and go to billets, did any of them ever come back again? You know, meaning that they weren't accepted by particular
billets? No, I don't remember that at all.
They normally managed to dispose of the children?
Yes.
And you were saying in your own case a very kindly lady received you and found you a nice feather bed. Did you have anything to eat or drink there before you went to bed?
We had hot milk. I think we'd had some biscuits in the school before we got into the lorry because time was getting on then. But we were past feeling hungry, really. We'd all consumed our quarter pound bar of chocolate and we had a hot milk. Being a farmhouse, I suppose there was plenty of milk available. She wasn't nonplussed by the fact that we'd all arrived on the doorstep. And we had hot milk and went to bed.
Can you remember your feelings as you were being driven about in this lorry? Were you at all anxious?
No, not really. I don't think anxious at all. We were trying to sing to keep our to keep us going because the younger ones were getting tired. And there were two or three gentlemen with us, presumably local, you know, councillors or whatever they happened to be, billeting officers and whatnot, and they were trying to jolly us along. I mean, everybody was very sympathetic and helpful and trying to keep us happy.
How long did you stay in that farmhouse?
Not more than about two or three weeks. I can imagine that there must have been a lot of fun and games in Ashford trying to sort out. I'm not sure whether actually an infant school went to Ashford by mistake and whether there had to be transfers done or whether the infant school didn't turn up and it was just us. But we were going to share schooling facilities with Ashford High School, which meant that we went in the morning and they went to school in the afternoon and vice versa on other terms. We changed over. So we couldn't be too far from the centre of Ashford. But on the other hand, they couldn't get us all into Ashford. And I went to a billet which was on the way to Kingsnorth, on the Kingsnorth Road, on the outskirts of Ashford. Small, fairly modern bungalows, semi-detached bungalows, and just two bedrooms. And the people there had expected to have a little girl to go with their little girl. And when I arrived, they were rather horrified, but nevertheless took me in. At least the wife took me in, and when the husband came home later, he thought it was a teacher sitting there at tea time.
Yes, I'd like to ask you a lot about that billet, but if I could just stick to the first one. Can you remember the farmer's name?
Cheeseman, I think. In this case, Mr. and Mrs. Cheeseman. It was Mrs. Cheeseman who welcomed us, and they were elderly. They weren't young farmers. They had quite a lot of help on the farm, and I imagine that in the past Mrs. Cheeseman had done quite a lot of work on the farm, and she took us around and showed us the hens and that sort of thing. It was a mixed farm, and they had quite a lot of fruit trees and things like that. But in the main, you see, we weren't going to school at all. We were left to our own devices quite a lot, and I suppose I felt fairly responsible. I used to order the other ones about as they were younger than me.
What did you call Mrs. Cheeseman?
We called her Mrs. Cheeseman, yes. We didn't call her auntie or anything like that.
And how about the other evacuees? Can you remember their names?
No, I can't. No, I've tried that, but I didn't really mix with them again after that, funnily enough. I might have seen them about, but if you're not in the same year at school, you don't really mix with the younger children.
So could you describe to me your life on the farm? You say there was no schooling during these 2 or 3 weeks. What did you do with yourself all day?
Well, as far as I remember, we used to go for long walks, which were quite a novelty. It was quite a novelty to us, you must remember. We used to go... Charing has a huge hill on the way to Lenham, and we used to walk along this road and watch the traffic going by and watch army lorries going by, which we thought was quite fascinating, waved to all the soldiers as they went by. And we'd sit on a gate by the side of the road and watch what was going on. Mrs. Cheeseman wasn't very strict. As long as we were there at mealtime, she didn't really mind what we were doing. And we could walk around the farm, look at some of the animals, and nobody seemed to bother us very much, you know.
Did you have any jobs to do?
None at all, no. I imagine we must have offered to wash up now and again. I hope we did, anyway.
How about food there? Did you have...
Very nice
different
food.
Sorts of food.
Not very different from what I've been used to now. Mostly just, joint on Sunday. And very nice food, as far as I remember. Puddings and pies and things.
And how were you treated by the family, do you think? Were you sort of welcomed as one of them, or did you feel that you were sort of boarding there?
No, we were welcomed, I think, really, as one of them. I think they were of an age to be motherly towards us. Mrs. Cheeseman felt sorry for us, these little, London children that had come down. And I think she thought we were deprived, but actually we were quite fit and healthy and well-fed.
That's interesting. Do you think they had a sort of image of what evacuees would be?
I think so, yes. I think they must have done. I remember her asking what sort of school we went to, and I think she was quite pleased to find it was a grammar school. And we none of us really had London Cockney accents, as it were. A lot of the girls would have been fee-paying and come from Dulwich and all, around. The school was sort of dumped was trapped in Camberwell in a way. Because the cloth workers' company who'd founded it had bought the house and it had gradually been enlarged. But in actual fact, it was a very nice school for those days, and a few years before we'd had a big campaign to raise money to build a swimming pool in the school, so that we had our own swimming pool and that sort of thing.
Well, what sort of image do you think they had of evacuees, the country people?
Well, I suppose they really were expecting underfed, pale, pasty-looking children from the East End, probably. And no doubt some people did get evacuees like that. But in the main, I don't think we ever knew what they'd expected. They didn't say anything. They didn't say, oh, you know, you're better than we expected, or anything like that.
Did you have any health checks or sort of checks in your hair before you were sent to billets, can you remember?
Not before we went to billets. We'd always had at school anyway in those days. You always had regular checks at school. But I imagine, I don't think we ever did before we went to the billets, no. But later on at school we always had checks, even when we, you know, when we were evacuated. And we had the normal doctor's visit once a year or whatever it was. It wasn't very often anyway.
Had Mrs. Cheeseman had children of her own?
Yes, she'd had two daughters.
So she was used to having young people about. Could I ask you now a little more about the day war broke out? You did mention earlier on that you were at church. Is that right? When the siren went?
Yes.
And you somehow associated that with Chamberlain's announcement?
Well, I think Chamberlain's announcement was on the Sunday morning, wasn't it? Early. And Mrs. Cheeseman had said that we should go to church because she thought the school would expect us to be at church. She didn't go to church, I gather, probably the excuse being that the farm couldn't stop for anyone to go to church. And she sent us off in the direction of church. And I remember it was quite a long way, but on the way there it was downhill, so we didn't mind very much, and we're sitting in church. And the service was going on, and the vicar stopped the service. Somebody, I suppose the church warden or somebody, must have come and spoken to him. And he went to the pulpit and announced that he'd just been told that the air raid siren had gone. And he thought the best thing was for everyone to get to their homes as soon as possible. And the service stopped and everyone went out of church. And we ran, or tried to run, from the church back to the farm. And we didn't hear anything, we just didn't look to left or right, but we ran. We were frightened. We thought probably planes were going to come over and that sort of thing. And it was all uphill. And by the time we got there, panting and out of breath and red-faced, we told Mrs. Cheeseman what had happened. And she said, oh, the air raid warning's been over a long time ago. It was only about 5 minutes. So it was all for nothing. But that was my first memory of air raid warning, the beginning of the war.
Did that make any difference to your sort of expectations of a stay in the country once you knew war had actually been declared? Did you then expect to stay a bit longer?
Yes, I suppose we did, because although we always we still thought that it'd be a short, sharp war, and that our, you know, our brave soldiers would fight the enemy and, you know, it would soon be over. We knew they were going down to the Channel ports and they had gone over to France.
Because of these troop movements?
Yes,
saw,
that we could see. We happened to be in the right place to see any, you know, army lorries going down full of troops.
And was there much activity at that time?
Well, quite a lot, yes.
What would there have been, sort of convoys of army
convoys
trucks?
Of army lorries, yes. We don't remember seeing any armoured cars or anything like that. They were nearly all troop lorries.
Can you remember contact with your parents in these very early days in Charing? Did you write to your mother and father, or did you hear from them, can you remember?
Before we left school, we had to have a stamped addressed envelope with us, with presumably a sheet of paper in which we were to write to our parents as soon as we were settled. And I do remember that we did post off these letters, probably on the Sunday. But I don't remember getting letters from my parents straight away. I imagine the post wasn't all that wonderful, and I don't remember hearing from them very quickly. And of course, you didn't have phones and that sort of thing, did you, in those days? So you wouldn't have had much contact, no.
And can you remember when you were told you had to go to Ashford? How did you feel about that in the light of this sort of carefree life you were living in?
Well, I was just pleased that I'd see my contemporaries again, really. I mean, the novelty of being on a farm and was wearing off by that time. And I think we were looking forward to getting into some kind of routine by then.
Can you remember how Ashford impressed you when you first saw the area compared with, say, your home in Camberwell, in Peckham, rather?
Well, It seemed the air seemed fresher and the houses seemed further apart than we were used to. But Ashford High Street was the same as a high street in most places. A Woolworths and a co-op probably. And
it was quite a big town.
It was quite a big town, Ashford, yes. A market town, had a market on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I think. And so that it wasn't a small place. And the grammar schools, the high school rather, was as big as our own school.
Did you feel more at home there than you would have done in Charing, do you think?
Oh, I think definitely, yes. Yes.
And how soon did you meet up with your old friends?
Well, we were taken to Ashford, and I was put in this bungalow, the couple, Mr. and Mrs. Danstone, and they had two little girls, one of five, who was named Esther, and a baby, Ruth. And so you may have gathered from that they were religious people, Bible-reading people. He was a lay preacher. And it wasn't until we were actually attended school the next day that I found my own friends. And I discovered that the two of them were in a billet with some elderly people at Stubbs Cross, which was not very far from where I was in King's North Road. And so I was quite pleased about that we lived in the same direction and we went to school. I often went to school with them, met up with them, went off to school.
Can you remember this sort of system of billeting? You've explained how you were put in this bungalow. How did that come about? Were you sort of put in a hall and then split up when you arrived in Ashford? Or did you just have an address to be taken to?
We had an address to be taken to because I imagine a lot of groundwork had been done during the weeks that we'd been in Charing. And they had matched people up as far as they could. But in my case, it definitely wasn't correct because she was, and the poor lady had stood out for quite a long time about having evacuees because they only had two bedrooms. One was rather small and one wasn't all that big really, and eventually when I had a room to myself, they had their own bed, they had the baby's cot and a single bed for their daughter all in the one bedroom. And I don't remember thinking, oh, poor things at that time. But looking back, I mean, they must have cursed me, really.
Do you think, looking back, they made any attempt to match up sort of similar social classes with evacuees and billets? You know, obviously, in your case, they went rather astray regarding age in this particular. But did they try to give you a similar home what you were used to, would you think?
I don't think they would have done particularly, no. I don't think they really had enough scope to be able to do that, enough leeway, because there were so many of us, and really I imagine that Ashford was a, what you would call now, sort of middle class area. There wouldn't have been any awful houses and families that you couldn't billet people with, and I think that it was more of the luck of the draw, really.
And how was this home in Ashford, your first billet there, how did that compare with your home at in Dulwich? Was it a similar sort of standard of living?
In a way, but it was very, very much smaller. And more modern, of course. But I remember thinking the food was far inferior to what I'd been used to. The lady of the house must have been, when I look back, very harassed because of the two children. The baby had eczema and she constantly had to keep bathing it, and it wore a lint mask over its face for quite a lot of the time. So really this poor person who had evacuee billeted on her really wasn't looking forward to it at all. But she certainly didn't go out of her way to incorporate me into the family. She didn't say, would you mind holding the baby? Or she didn't say, would you mind doing this, that or the other? I had to fit in where I could, really. And she was not very good cook. And we, on Sundays, we always had, she had a joint of meat and we'd have vegetables with it. And then for the rest of the week, we had her cut off that meat. She'd slice it off cold and make warm gravy and put with it. And these dead white boiled potatoes, I can see them on the plate now. And that's what we had every day of the week, except Sundays when it was hotter because it was just being cooked. And I remember being very, very annoyed because my mother came down one day and I had told her the tale about this awful food I was having, which is why I was spending so much money on sweets and things. And Mrs. Dunstan produced a sausage toad in the hole, which I had never had before, which was seen very nice at the time, you know, and I was busy telling my mother that we didn't usually have that, and that we usually had that. But I don't know why that was. I suppose it was just because it was simple to do and she didn't take much interest in food.
So wouldn't you have had vegetables with these white potatoes?
Not during the week. I don't remember any vegetables at all.
Or puddings. Did you have any puddings?
No, no puddings, no. Just this meat and potatoes.
What would you have had for your breakfast?
Well, now and again we had an egg, but very often we could still get bananas in those days, and I can remember being met one cold day with just a banana and a piece of bread and butter on the plate for breakfast, which seemed quite odd to me because I hadn't been used to anything like that. But no porridge or no cereals of any kind.
And how about tea and or supper? Did you have anything? You would have gone home midday for your meal, would you?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
From school?
We went home at midday, yes.
Would you have had any tea or supper?
Yes, we had tea. I think just bread and butter and jam and that sort of thing. And then a hot drink at night.
Were you conscious of being hungry?
Very, yes. I used to compare notes with the other girls at school and see what they were having to eat. And the two that were in the bungalow at Stubbs Cross were eating quite well because they were with an elderly people who had been all used to bringing up. They had eight daughters, and so they were quite used to catering for young stomachs, as it were.
Could you do anything to supplement your food?
Not really. I had very little money, and I couldn't say, can I have a biscuit? Or I wouldn't say, can I have a biscuit? Because I thought they probably didn't have them. They would have put her in an embarrassing position, really.
So do you think you lost weight during this period? Or
no, I didn't.
Suffered?
I didn't lose weight in that period because I consumed so many bars of chocolate.
But when we were moving from Bournemouth Road to Hill 85, CO sent me on about an hour ahead on a motorbike to go and find out where it was and stop them when they take it.